Save big on your Memorial Day barbecue, all in the Kroger app. Get 3-pound rolls of juicy 80% lean ground beef for $3.49 a pound with a digital coupon. Then get select varieties of flavorful Powerade, Body Armor Super Drink, or Arizona Tea for 77 cents each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Save big money and transform your home with new appliances now at Menards. We offer the lowest prices and the largest in-stock appliance selection ready to take home today. Check out top appliance brands, including KitchenAid, Maytag, Whirlpool, Amana, and Criterion. Upgrade your home and save big money on new appliances at Menards. Shop our entire selection of appliance options online today at Menards.com.
Save big money at Menards.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
Hey, everybody. It's me, Mr. Big, with once again a fantastically cool show. And today we brought to you probably the most intelligent person I've yet to meet online on Twitter. He's absolutely a gem when it comes to all kinds of crazy things going on in this world.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Transform your home in one weekend with paint from Menards. Get a paint that combines durability and gorgeous color. Dutch Boy's DuraClean Interior Paint and Primer in 1 offers Stay Clean technology, making your home stay beautiful and clean longer. And with Dutch Boy's easy opening, smooth pouring container, transforming your home has never been easier. Save big money on Dutch Boy paints and head into Menards to get your paint project started today.
Save big money at Menards.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Which we've been talking about today. So with no further ado, let me bring on our good friend, William Ramsey. Good morning, sir. Good afternoon, sir. How are you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm perfectly fine. Thank you so much. Good. Tell us a little bit about yourself and how you came to be involved in the crazy world of research.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
Grand Canyon University makes earning your degree possible with over 130 academic programs for traditional campus students, with more than 80 bachelor's programs offered online. GCU provides you with the personal support you need, from complimentary unofficial transcript evaluations within 24 business hours to scholarships, academic support, and your GCU graduation team, led by your own university counselor. Find your purpose at GCU. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu.
Well, I think I was always kind of an independent researcher. I kind of went through a conventional process of education and realized there's a lot more that they left out of my, standard conventional curriculum. So I had to do a lot of research on my own, and that kind of sent me down pathways away from the corporate media, television as a medium. So I did a lot of reading, and I really kind of cut my teeth on 9/11 and a different aspect of 9/11 that people weren't talking about, which was kind of like the occult aspect. And so that led to my first book in 2010. But I was always kind of researching, even when I was in law school, independently. I was 95 to 98. And so that just a lot of things. A lot of the stuff, like when I did Occult Hollywood, my first documentary was 2010. So it was 14 years ago. And at that time, people weren't as talking about it as much as it's kind of like now prevalent today. So that just kind of led it. So then it's led to me having 5 books, 5 documentaries on Vimeo. And my podcast is in the top 0.5% of podcasts in the world. So I kind of really kind of made my name for myself as just kind of like a pure researcher and putting down things with a lot of footnotes. And part of that research included this kind of underground aspect of Hollywood that a lot of people weren't talking about.
It's amazing. I mean, I'm your everyday kind of Hollywood kind of a fan kind of a guy, right? And I knew some weird things were going on. I'll slow my voice down. I apologize. I listened to a podcast called Lazy Days and Lazy Nights. Crazy Days. And he talked about some weird things, but you start to get into it, it gets really strange and hurry, doesn't it?
Yeah. Strange connections, strange, mysterious happenings. Disappearances, worse than that. And yeah, it's really kind of almost like a mob town in a lot of ways, like much more like Vegas. Than
yes. I mean, it's just amazing. Even you go back to the early days of the pre-cult stuff, you have that crazy stuff going on.
Yeah.
And when it really takes off big time, in my opinion, we get Jack Parsons running around California.
Yeah. I think an interesting kind of historical book is Hollywood Babylon by Kenneth Anger, which goes all the way back. And I think his first chapter was about a scandal involving Fatty Arbuckle.
Yeah.
And around the World War One area. So this goes all the way back. It kind of ruined his career. It was a very salacious story, but that was kind of set the mold for Hollywood for the next 100 years with this. At least attracting people to go to Hollywood because of this type of debauchery or whatever. Like, so,
well, at one time when I was much younger, I had hair, and before the cancer started to hit, I was helping on independent horror films. And every time when we'd be on set, we hear someone else say, "I'm gonna go to LA and make it big," right? And they usually come back in a couple years, a little worse for wear, a little bit life experience. But to think that every day now coming off the bus is people 18, 19 years old with no acting experience, no job skills, but they think they'll do anything to get that 5 minutes in a film role. It's incredible.
It's incredible. I think there's like a whole book to be written about the Boulevard of Broken Dreams in Hollywood, because there's so many kids like that who have naive dreams, and they either get chewed up and spit out, they become addicts of one sort or another. And a lot of abuse, like the really super hardcore, and Crazy Days and Nights documents a lot of that.
He does a good job.
Really dark stuff, yeah.
To think that as we speak, there's a long line of people outside some UCLA kids' dorm room waiting to see if they can get a chance and to do anything to be on set on a documentary, on a TV show, whatever it might be, that will never be seen by anyone. It's crazy. Right. So let's talk about my good friend, Jack Parsons. He knew our mutual friend of our, not mutual friend by any means, but a guy of interest, Aleister Crowley.
Correct.
And now Sir Crawley gets interesting. Which way do you think, sir? Because he comes to California with his crazy ideas, or?
I think Aleister Crowley was just Crowley called Parsons his most important disciple in Pasadena. No. He ran the Philema, or the Agape Lodge was the name of it. And it was during a different time. It was during the heyday of Hollywood. And Parsons mixed with a lot of Hollywood types, some known, some unknown. People know L. Ron Hubbard. But he was also in kind of a group of other kind of science fiction writers. But Parsons was quite a remarkable guy and, you know, was right there in that kind of heyday of Hollywood in the 40s and 50s and died mysteriously.
Yeah, blew himself out, supposedly.
Supposedly.
No, if I understand correctly, Hubbard stole Parsons' wife.
That's kind of the story, is that he walked off with his paramour, his girlfriend at the time. I don't know if they were really married. I forgot what her name was. But yeah. He stole his money too. Hubbard ran off with his money. And they had a boat selling business kind of right around the time. I think Hubbard was starting up Scientology and he ran off to Florida and Parsons supposedly did some magical spell and like brought Hubbard back to shore. And Crowley met comments on it that Parsons fell for like a confidence man. So Hubbard has confidence man.
I would concur, and we all know that Hubbard then supposedly started Scientology on a bet that he could create a religion if he wanted to, because he's such a good writer.
Because it's the best way to make money. That's what he told people at Pasadena, what they called it the Parsonage or something, because it was a huge mansion. And so there's actually a guy, I forgot his last name, but he was a writer, and he remembered Hubbard telling him that. The best way to make money is start a religion. So, and Scientology was very much a money-centered organization, no question about it.
It seems to me, doesn't it? Yes, they're very deeply involved in Hollywood to this day, are they not?
Absolutely. They have a celebrity center. It's like a huge hotel. And so many celebrities or people of note. And Hubbard made it a point to attract famous people to his group in order to get other people. So people like Tom Cruise, Travolta have passed through, or maybe are still involved to a certain degree. Travolta seems to have distanced himself, but those are just kind of commonly known figures. There's all kinds of people in the industry itself that are behind the scenes that are involved in Scientology. And you can just see their impact in Hollywood. You could, because I live by there, and they have huge organizations and properties, and it's really something else. Like they've
The lawsuit with Danny Masterson.
Right. That's a good example. Yeah.
Yes.
And they cover for their own, right? So that was one of the reasons why Matt, ostensibly, the allegation is, I don't know if it's true, but that Masterson had the help of certain people in power to keep him from being prosecuted for his misdeeds. Yeah.
That's my understanding as well. And now there's another lawsuit. Us looking about Scientology in some real interesting terms that I'm going to mispronounce the guy's name, that is now leader of Scientology, will be forced to testify in this lawsuit. Yeah, we'll see what happens tonight.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. What is the new leader's name? It's Miscavige, right?
Yeah. Supposedly they serve papers that he has to produce his wife. I mean,
they don't know where his wife is. His wife's been missing for over a decade, yeah. I believe.
Well, if I was a betting man, my money would be that she's in the ground someplace, but hopefully I'm wrong. I would never see that anyone. But
she wouldn't be the first. There's a lot of mysterious things around Scientology and people who've bitten the dust, so to speak.
Yes. A lot of people die in Hollywood, it seems, under mysterious circumstances.
Yeah, no, it's very common. That aren't solved either. They're just kind of left in a very curious way. I mean, there's a lot, yeah. And it shows, I think even looking back, you can use the P. Diddy case and look back as a lens where these guys have organizations that are like a mob cell where they have different people in power. Somebody's handling the drugs. Somebody's handling the police contacts. Somebody's handling the finance. And so that seems to be what's going on. I mean, at least according to the allegations made in this most recent P. Diddy lawsuit, that's the organization that he operated. and had cleaners and fixers, just like almost something out of Pulp Fiction, right?
Or worse than that, even you go back to Hollywood, you know, studios had those fixers big time.
Who had it?
Hollywood studios had fixers.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, like I said, like the mob model, the Las Vegas model, isn't that far off in Hollywood. It may have a nice kind of sugar-coated exterior of dancing and lights, but some of these guys that ran these studios were not much different than mob bosses.
Well, you consider the fact that much of their financing came from the early mafia.
Well, there you go. And a lot of the stories are legion about the financing of some of these films with things that are paid for but aren't actually made in the film. So
that's funny.
Slush funds, drugs for the actors, people of the night for people, you know, odd things that are listed in some of these costs for films that aren't actually what they say they are, if that makes sense.
Right. Well, it's easy way to wash money.
Yeah, wash money.
Yeah, I mean, you think the much money that Netflix spends on films, and how much is what's going on there?
Billions, billions and billions of dollars.
Yeah. I mean, you look at the film Gotti that was filmed in Ohio, that bombed big time. They spent $1 million on Pitbull. The theme song, they paid $1 million, supposedly, right? What actually happened, that money, as you were saying yourself, it's quite a bit, in my opinion, money washing scheme.
Yeah, I believe that's the case, yeah.
I mean, Gene Hollow ran with them, the head of the mafia in New Jersey for a while. He took her to Cuba.
Interesting.
And then her career got going in the right direction. But, you know, he's a bit of a interesting guy because he would give samples of her pubic hair to his friends. Now, that's pretty weird, but, you know, that's the mafia, that's Hollywood. They do weird things, it seems.
Yeah, and there's an overlap, right? There's all kinds of mobsters. What was the guy who shot in Beverly Hills through his front? The guy who started the Flamingo Hotel.
Bud Spiegel. Yeah.
So he has overlaps there. Elvis is like one of his bosses was a known mob boss. Sidney Korshak. That's a whole nother story.
Yeah.
One of the more influential guys in all of Hollywood, was a lawyer, but also had Sub Rosa connections that were not legal. Yeah.
Then you can link him into the current governor of Illinois' family. I mean, it gets really bad.
Ritzkers,
you don't have to go far. Now, going back to Aleister Crowley, he was connected to some of the major groups in England, correct? Before he came to the United States?
Absolutely, yeah. He was involved with the Masons. But also he was involved in a group called the Golden Dawn, which was supposed to be a post-Masonic order. So you'd go through Masonry. But they were really kind of a group of ceremonial magicians and involved people in the arts. W.B. Yeats was a known poet who was friends and actually had a kind of conflict with Crowley. But he actually ended up going into a lawsuit in early 20th century because he supposedly lifted some of the materials from them that he took an oath not to divulge or he meant to keep secret. But yeah, so Crowley went through that. He started his own group called the Astrum Argentum, which was kind of like a self-training occult group. And then he was affiliated with the OTO, the Ordo Templi Orientis out of Germany, which he eventually became head of.
Right, yeah. And supposedly, just like the Navy hired the mob to protect the docks in the East Coast, supposedly the Navy hired the OTO to protect the West Coast. I don't know if there's anything behind that or not, but that's an interesting story, but it's true.
It wouldn't surprise me. I mean, I don't know how much power or pull they had, but Crowley was clearly an agent of the British Empire when he was in the U.S. in New York City from 1914 to the sinking of the Lusitania, actually, and the involvement of the U.S. in World War I is when he went back to England. So
he was a spy for England in the United States?
Yeah, no question. Yeah, I think that's a proven fact. There's a book called Secret Agent 666 by, I can't remember the author's name, but he actually went into some of the archives, and it was the knowledge of the American intelligence that Crowley was an asset of British intelligence. And it plays out his whole life, really, probably from leaving Cambridge to his death in 1947. He had some kind of affiliation all the way up to the kind of strange flight of Rudolf Hess to Northern England. He was sending documents to, of all things, Ian Fleming and Ian Fleming's boss. I forgot his name. Godfrey, who was involved in, you know, British intel. So,
now, if I'm not mistaken, Hess was also involved in some occult stuff in Germany, was he not?
No question. Yeah, no question. He was an occultist, an esotericist. He believed in all kinds of stuff. You know, he believed in astrology and almost every kind of fringe idea Hess was.
Wow.
And the rumor is, when he took that flight, he was wearing kind of like a magician's outfit. Like he had worn some kind of outfit with the moons and stars and stuff like that to give him energy, to make it a success. Like they were literally thought they were going to have some kind of detente with the far right elements of the British Empire. They were known as the, not the Bund. But there was a guy named Hamilton he was supposed to meet. And it turns out it was all an intel ruse set up by Fleming. It's all part totally secret, but it's assumed that Fleming had been in Germany. He spoke fluent German, right? So he knew Germany, and he had spent time there. So he had assets within the Reich, the Third Reich, and seeded ideas that this would be an optimal thing for them to do. And, I mean, it's unbelievable, really, in human history. There's never been somebody doing something so supposedly daring, who's like third in line for the Third Reich, right? I think it went Hitler, Bormann, and then Hess or something like that. So it's a remarkable event, and it involves Crowley. And actually, I have a section in my first book, Crowley writing this, saying, you know, I know these people, I can advise, and he was offering his services to kind of debrief Hess and see what he knew.
Sure. And when I maybe perhaps they used Crowley to try to convince Hess to come over, right?
Yeah.
Wow.
And it worked.
It did work. It did work. I wonder what I know that England had an astrologer that was supposedly hired to go and predict what Hitler's astrologer was saying. They're trying to use that against
him. Yeah. No, there's all kinds of weird occult stuff that was going on. I did a show about Hannison, who was kind of like a new age hypnotist, astrologer type, who met a mysterious end. But there's a connection between him and Hitler, and him kind of training Hitler in these kind of dark arts, but also the stage kind of performance that Hitler adopted with this, you know, very dramatic kind of, lighting and things like that, and music and things like that. This Hannison guy's an interesting character, and there's a couple of movies about him.
Huge, well, to explore that alone. The psychic war, the cult war with the Third Reich, I think we call it.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, they're all occult. I mean, the occultists, they're all kind of occultist. You know, that's why the Nazi party kind of grew up, is they were part of the right, but they weren't part of the kind of old, only person who was Goring was really kind of a part of an old German family. The other ones were really upstarts who weren't the kind of conservative, the standard kind of dry conservatives of the Germany at that time. And Hitler was part of that. That's why he really wanted to have Goering involved in the NSDAP, is because it gave him some type of credibility and legitimacy within the old German aristocracy, which he was not part of.
A huge, huge rabbit hole.
Yeah, I mean, that's a whole nother show. I mean, but there are strange kind of overlaps between that time and Hollywood, and kind of how odd it all, how layered and nuanced it really was, yeah.
Look at the propaganda effect of Hollywood. How much propaganda is generated by Hollywood? Stuff that we know and stuff we don't know. How much research has DARPA used, what they use from Hollywood to get think certain things? You know what I mean?
Right. No, it's a very good question. Then there it goes all the way up. There's always been secret. I think I did a show with a guy who really has researched the intelligence, cultural engineering behind Hollywood for so many of these. There's a lot of CIA agents working with Hollywood figures to get things done. One that comes to mind in the 50s was a very well-known high-level CIA agent by the name of Tracy Barnes, who was also kind of implicated in JFK in 63. But he, in the 50s, he was involved in getting Animal Farm, Orwell's Animal Farm, made, because that was a good piece of Cold War propaganda. And it goes all the way up to like Pearl Harbor in 2001, the timing of Pearl Harbor, and even other kind of pieces of, I mean, film is the best way to propagandize people in the world, especially if they don't even know it's propaganda. So the intel agencies are all over Hollywood. Yeah.
You know, when you think it's the news, you can trust the news, and why don't we use the news to teach something or suppress something? You know, we can
absolutely
trust
cultural change, foment cultural change. Sure.
Yeah.
I mean, was it the little dictator? That was that.
Yeah. With them.
Right. So that was World War II. I think that the guy who did It's a Wonderful Life was, you know, gave his services to World War II and created propaganda pieces. His name was Capra, Frank Capra.
Yes. I was thinking, the actor who threw B-17s in the war.
Right. There's a lot. There were a lot of guys. I think it was Cooper. Was it Cooper who did it?
When my brain shuts down, I can't think of actor's name until next week. But he would later become a brigadier general. He would fly one of the last combat missions over Vietnam in a B-52. Jimmy Stewart,
that's right, yeah.
You know, I mean, lots of money was spent on lots of Hollywood films to get us to think certain ways.
No question. It's a great change agent, too, especially, I mean, even you can leave out kind of the intel agencies, but if you wanted to kind of change the culture, the film is probably one of the most efficient and effective ways to do it. You know,
if they can't get us to believe anything they want us to believe, like landing on the moon, perhaps.
Right, correct.
Now, there you got Stanley Kubrick, right? Who's not necessarily involved in the cult necessarily, but yet he talks about unknown mysterious organizations like he did with Eyes Wide Shut.
Yeah, a lot of secret esotericism pervades a lot of his movies, believe it or not. Certainly, kind of mind control themes are in Eyes Wide Shut, but also A Clockwork Orange, The Shining. So there's undercurrents there of his knowledge. Yeah, I just did a show with Steven Snyder, and he was a reader of Paul Krasner's The Realist, which was kind of like a parapolitical alternate magazine thing. Then Krasner was friends with Mae Brussel. I don't know if you've heard her name, but she was kind of one of the early, you could put her in a conspiracy theorist box, or if you wanted to label her, but definitely alternate media. She was a big John Lennon was a big fan of hers and gave her $5,000, which was a significant sum at the time. But she questioned almost everything in the 60s, from JFK to the Warren Commission to a lot of these other assassinations. But she was right, I think. I think she was actually right to question, because they were all.
I'm so old that in the day it used to be question everything, you know, the idea, you know, you question everything. Now we can't. Now, you know, the same people who told us to question everything 60 years ago are telling us to question anything is evil. You can't do it. You have to trust. And perhaps trust is
less. Yeah, research is bad. I mean, it's really Orwellian. It's an incredible situation where they're involved in some of the most vicious psyops, psychological operations the world has ever seen. There's no question about it.
Oh, absolutely. And to think that the same film that we wanted to make people aware of, Animal Farm, is a film that they're trying to go out of their way to cancel.
Right. Like, almost like they just don't even talk about it. Like, it's almost omitted. Like, it's the most potent form of book burning, is to just omit it from the consciousness and act like it never existed. Animal Farm is a perfect example of, you know, psyops and public propaganda and changing the rules. And, you know, Napoleon comes to power and starts changing all the rules, right?
Yeah.
Like, and enforcing it. Like, so.
Yeah. And people don't talk about the author and his experiences in the Spanish Civil War. and what got him to do, you know, the Animal Farm, the things he's seen.
You know, firsthand, he took a shot in the face. I think he almost died. He got shot in the neck.
Eric Blair almost died. He had to escape Spain in order to save his life. You know, because the Spanish Republicans were interested in rooting out the incorrect anarchists, getting them shot. They were about stopping the fascists. It's crazy. But that's life in the big city, right?
Yeah, and I think that he found out, Orwell found out, that a lot of that kind of left-wing radicalism was being puppeteered by guys in Russia, too, in the Spanish Civil War. So he saw it as an international kind of movement. Like, he really opened his eyes to a lot of stuff. I mean, it's interesting because he's probably the most effective critic of socialism or communism at that time that's ever existed, as somebody who came from that worldview, you know.
Absolutely. And I wonder what we're I wonder now what we're being taught or manipulated about. I mean, this COVID is pretty obviously.
Yeah.
But what else? I don't know.
These wars are baloney. Open borders, they're good for you. They're terrible. They're basically taking the money that people have paid into the system and giving it to somebody else. So all your taxes that you paid over the last 20, 30, 40, 50 years is just being handed out. Like, you're expecting to get it back. You're not going to get it back. Like, the government's going to default. It has to default. It's just a matter of
choice.
No. Yeah, I don't know how they're going to get figured out. They have to wipe off this debt or do something remarkable. Yeah, I don't even know how they're going to get rid of it. They have to just say, we're not going to pay the debt, which is a default. And then everything turns to nothing. And if they keep printing money, then that means your whole entire savings and your 401k is worth nothing.
Absolutely. Like,
that's what they're doing it to all Americans. So you think your government represents you, at least the U.S. government, you're dumb, man. They're raping the public.
We should be more careful. Again, do the research that's easily available. The tools that we have online to find out information is awe-inspiring.
Yeah, yeah. And that's why they have to make Putin the boogeyman, because they're actually the rulers of the U.S., are the actual boogeyman. They're the nightmare within. It's a much more sinister aspect than actually a foreign enemy, because the enemy
is very true.
20 times worse. Yeah.
And you wonder how much influence the different people had over the years, like Crowley. I mean, did they start something that's now being continued, or did they bury themselves deeply within American society that now they can pull the strings?
That's a good question. I don't know. You know, I know that the people who are running the country now don't care about the country and the citizenry, but I don't know how they got to that spot, like how the vote fraud and the ballot fraud and DARPA, you know, the shot fraud and all this other stuff, like how it got to be this bad, but it's bad. I don't know. There's a cultist. I just published something like on my social media. It was an article, I think, from 1927 that said 25%. At that time, of the people in D.C. were part of some kind of secret society, right? So how are these secret societies getting together to make decisions for the rest of us? Because they certainly were 100 years ago in D.C. What else is going on now? The Skull and Bones are all over the power structure of and the Masons, all over D.C. What's going on? I mean, are they the ones making the decisions for the rest of us? I think we ought to know.
Have you ever read the book, The War is a Racket?
Yeah, that's Smedley Butler.
Yeah. Maybe more people should read that book.
Yeah, they should. It is a racket. It's basically, I mean, Ukraine isn't even a real state. It's not an independent state. It's really just a functionary of the American Empire. It's not independent. So anybody who thinks Zelensky is independent or got duly elected, the real deceiver is themselves. They're deceiving themselves. So I think, and that's really what this war is kind of like a huge money laundering engine. Yeah,
it's incredible. I mean, we go through it. We don't even take the time to look at it.
Well, they should, because it's like they're stealing money from the American people. I mean, it's a total joke. And that guy Johnson, the total joke Speaker of the House, he said he wasn't going to give any money for these wars, and he went into some kind of skiff, some kind of select compartmentalized information thing, and came out and said, yeah, I'm going to work with the Democrats to get this passed. Like, it's incredible. Like, he was working with his former enemies to pass this bill that is going to give $100 billion to war. We don't know the consequences. Like, people don't understand the kind of engines, the way that World War II and World War I started. They weren't planned out like, oh, let's all have a world war. Right. It was slow, incremental fighting. There was Sitzkriegs. There were, like, scuffles. And then it just burst out into full total war.
Absolutely.
And that's what's happening now. This kindling for total war are happening now. But the people are too stupid, and their governmental leaders are too corrupt to give them warning. There's nobody pulling back on the reins, at least in the U.S. It's insane.
No. And to think the world could change in 30 minutes.
Absolutely. There was times during the Cuban Missile Crisis that there was a guy who got received. He was a submarine officer of the Russian, well, it was the USSR at the time. He got receipts to shoot off his, he got a, like a message to shoot off nuclear bombs. And instead he like was like, oh, is this a real message? I don't know if this is real. This is a true story. And he could have just followed orders and just shot him off into the U.S. and blown the world to smithereens. Instead, he waited, and then he asked, and then it turns out it was a false message. So he actually forced, he's like a hidden hero of human history, where he defied orders and didn't shoot off. I got to find that story, but it's a real story. But these kind of things can happen. Like, you can just have, like, you, Joe Biden's not functioning, right? He's not a functioning entity. So somebody could do something or do get away with it. Somebody else is running the country. It's not Joe
Biden. Somebody else's question is who?
It's not the hyena.
I mean, instead of saying middle Wisconsin, the people in power have three things in common. They all belong to the Masonic Lodge. They all went to St. Catherine's High School. All of them have some links to known pedophiliacs, known pedophiliacs, right? That doesn't happen at random.
Right. It's not much different. You know, in San Francisco, they all go through St. Ignatius, right? So it's like the Jesuit high school. This is what Gruesome Newsom went through. St. Ignatius, and then I think they join up with the Olympic Club or one of these other kind of high-end clubs. And then they get, you know, they become anointed. And his career is pretty much anointed. Well, for a terrible job. Just a totally incompetent buffoon. But if you have the connections, you're good.
I pity them.
Yeah.
Was it Newsom married to a woman that's not seen one of Donald Trump's sons?
I don't know. Oh, I think that was a former relationship. I think he's married to somebody called Siebel. I forgot her.
Right. He's married to somebody else. I think it's a former wife of Brad's girlfriend.
Yeah. But I think he did.
And supposedly they would go to swap, couple swaps.
I'm not, so nothing would surprise me. Yeah.
No, it doesn't surprise me. I don't know if it's true or not, but be, if it's true, it'd be interesting conversations around that table at night.
Yeah. No, he's got, I mean, he has a background. He has a definite background. He was in business with one of the Getty sons, right? So the Getty Empire.
Yes, absolutely. Big time.
When his dad was kind of a legal fixer in San Francisco in Democratic politics. So.
Let's talk about one of my favorite movies, Knife's Gate, that now scares the hell out of me.
Yeah.
I went seeing that movie back in the day. I thought it was really a fun film. I enjoyed it. My wife enjoyed it. And then I saw your documentary that talked about it. And now I'm scared when I see it across my feed on Amazon.
It's probably one of the most Luciferian movies ever made, or satanic. And Johnny Depp, right, who in real life had some very interesting ties and friendships with the known guy from the West Memphis Three, Damien Eccles. But the Ninth Gate is basically almost like a saga where the lead character finds the from three different books, puts them together, and achieves the Ninth Gate. It's some kind of like satanic apotheosis at the very end.
Well done.
It's very dark. When you understand the depths of the symbolism and the darkness, it's really an incredible work.
I think that Kowalski did it, and how much research he had to do to make that movie make sense is incredible.
Who did the research?
Roman Polanski, I think.
Oh, Polanski, yeah. Polanski directed it. But it shows his kind of like satanic background. Going all the way through Rosemary's Baby And then what was the other cult film that he did? Well, he did Chinatown, which is interesting, which has like a smiley face killers type death. And then Ninth Gate. I think it was a 1999 film too. 1999 was like a seminal year for filmmaking, occult filmmaking in Hollywood.
Makes sense.
Yeah, no, it was incredible because you had Eyes Wide Shut, Ninth Gate, The Matrix, End of Days with Arnold Schwarzenegger, which is kind of like a satanic thing. Like a really incredible output and I think the other one was Fight Club. All those films,
all full of
satanic symbolism and occultism and esotericism, all at the same year. It's really an incredible event, like that these guys all knew all that stuff. But Ninth Gate, at the very end of the Ninth Gate, it's basically something from Crowley, actually, which is the woman rides the beast, right? So this kind of entity that's following around Depp, they have Congress with each other, is a nice way of putting it, but she's riding him and Depp's character becomes the beast, right? He takes over from Boris Balkan, right? This whole
quest. Who was rejected for some reason.
Yeah. He basically fulfills what Boris Balkan couldn't, right? So he's the real kind of Satanist and Boris Balkan is the phony. And Boris Balkan is a 5 and a 6, right? So you see that same theme through all these kind of occult films, whether it's Ninth Gate, Tyler Durden, right? Harry Potter. These are not by accident. So, So that's, and then you can go all of these little parchments are full of occult symbolism and occult meaning, right? Occult stuff. Like you have the chessboard, you have the key, you have all kinds of things that are all significant symbols in Western esotericism, all integrated into the Ninth Gate.
It's incredible stuff. For a while I ran with a bunch of Wiccans, who I'll call ploy actors, right? Because they basically played. They weren't more than drinking a lot, sex with anything that moved a lot. They weren't thinking anything seriously. But when I look at the LTO and other groups, they tend to be, in my opinion, a lot more serious in their ideas. Would I be correct in assuming that, sir?
I think so. I think that's kind of like within the occult, posture themselves to see who is the most authentic occultist. And I've seen kind of like, I cover that in my book, Children of the Beast. Oh, no, sorry. Global Death Cult, where they're like fighting amongst themselves to see who's more evil and whose organization is more nefarious. So I think that that's something I found to be a trait amongst the kind of alternate religion class. Yeah.
Yes, that's interesting how that works out. I mean, I'm no expert in the field as you are. I get on it just my observation that I've seen in my own life is the difference between the girl that needs something done because she can't keep a job, so she acts whatever and does, versus doing a resume, going to job interview, and the guy that takes the time to set up the altar, do all these other things, do all the steps necessary to do whatever it is they're going to do. But know they have to go to the work job. Know they have to do the resume. Know they have to look for a job. And whatever else happens. Are you familiar with the movie called Miss Defoe's? I probably mispronounce it, which I apologize in advance. Mephisto's Waltz?
Mephisto's Waltz, is that it?
Yeah.
I think so. I vaguely remember. What about it?
I was just curious. Do you think that has satanic symbology or it's simply a horror film?
Well, I'd have to look into it. I don't know, but just the name Mephisto might give it away. But there's so many Mephisto waltzes. I don't know. I think there's so many films with kind of occult themes that I kind of almost look at it as it's like a default if it has an occult name. But I'd have to look into that. It doesn't come to mind offhand.
Well, I found an interesting horror film, but then you also talk about The Devil's Daughter.
Right.
Which I found interesting. Can you talk to us a little bit more about that author of the book, sir?
Yeah, Dennis Wheatley. So Dennis Wheatley is friends with Aleister Crowley. He actually knows him. He's a member of the kind of British intel And I think he was friend. They went and hung out with Crowley one night, Dennis Wheatley and Maxwell Knight. He was really the head of British domestic intelligence, MI5. And so they kind of had an interest in Crowley. I have a signed copy of a book, Crowley's Magic in Theory and Practice, to Dennis Wheatley. And Dennis Wheatley integrated all kinds of occultism into his novels. He was really kind of like the Stephen King of his age. I think that's fair to say. He wrote on a variety of different subjects. He wrote spy novels that influenced Ian Fleming. And he was friends with Ian Fleming as well. But he wrote these two books. One is Devil Rides Out and To the Devil, a Daughter, both made into films featuring Christopher Lee, right? Really interesting guy. He's made some interesting things about the occult. And also in British Intel, and had a kind of a secret World War II history.
Yes, that he does. Hasn't
never been divulged, at least to my knowledge. But no. The character in The Devil Rides Out, which I include in my documentary, Occult Hollywood 2, is Mokata, based upon Crowley. And he repeats a lot of Crowley's dictums. Do what thou wilt should be the whole of the law. And they're all involved in the occult and witchcraft. Yeah, and so,
I think in Devil Rides Out, they have, I can't think of the actress's name. At the time she did the film, she was like 16 or 17.
Natasha Kinski
was her name,
yeah. She's into The Devil, a Daughter. I think that's the second film. I don't think she's in The Devil Rides Out.
Yeah. And she's the daughter of the famous German actor, correct?
Klaus Kinski, that's correct, yeah.
Who has an interesting history as well, doesn't mean quite with us.
Yeah, he was insane. I think that Klaus Kinski had a screw, like two or three screws loose. But they seemed to work at certain roles, but he was out of his mind.
Yeah, I mean, she dropped out of Hollywood because she wanted to live a normal life after a while.
There's probably, I wouldn't be surprised if she was abused. I think he abused her, his daughter, is my understanding. That's the word that came out. But it's like, I think that there was a relationship between her and Polanski too.
Yes, there was, because of Tess. At that time, she was underage as well.
Right, so there you go. I mean, that keeps in line with Polanski. And I heard he's up to the same kind of abusive stuff in France, and that he's been either accused of what he was doing in the U.S.
Well, I mean, he's got to be 80s a day.
Yeah, he's got to be in his 80s, yeah. I don't know if he's been up to it recently, but I think he got away with a lot of misdeeds.
Oh, without a doubt.
He definitely, I mean, he was basically convicted in the United States for the abuse of a girl. And I think he took her pictures and stuff and then skipped out on the sentencing. So in between the conviction and the sentencing is when he left for France, that doesn't have an extradition treaty.
Right. Anybody else would have been put in jail waiting the sentencing, but because he's Roman and he's rich, looking back.
Yeah. And it's interesting too, like some of the aspects of the Manson deaths is left out of other people's analysis. And that is that his wife at the time, Sharon Tate, had made an occult film called, I think it's called Eye of the Needle or Eye of Something. But there are pictures of her with a full-on witch. Like his name was Alex Sanders and is really a proponent of two of the main, like you talked about Wicca. There's two kind of mainstream strains of Wicca. One is the Alexandrian and the other is the Gardnerian.
Yeah.
And Gardner, there's pictures of Gardner with Crowley stuff, and he clearly knew Crowley. So it's another kind of strain of the occult. And apparently he borrowed some of the rituals from Crowley. Crowley wrote Gardner a kind of like a seal to make him a member of the OTO, which I included in Children of the Beast. But the fact that Sharon Tate was very much involved in kind of the black magic stuff before what happened in 69 on Cielo Drive in Hollywood, I think is often left out. And she's in this movie kind of as a witch. And there's all kinds of, she does Do You Believe in Magic? She's saying this to the main characters.
Wow. I think
David Niven was in that movie too. Pardon me?
I did not know that. Thank you.
Yeah, let me see if I can find it.
This is incredible stuff going on that people don't talk, they don't know about.
They don't talk about it. And a lot of that stuff was kind of like covered. Eye of the Devil was the name of the film. Let's see if I can find this.
I'm trying to face if I can find it.
But she says all kinds of, you know, strange stuff. Here's the picture of Sanders with Tate. So you can see them. See if I can share this. Can you click that through? You have to click on the box on the underneath this on the bottom. You just have to click on it. There you go. So that's, I'll put it back on there. Can you put it back up? Click on it again. There you go. So that's Sharon Tate inside the magical circle with you. Alex Sanders, right?
Wow.
Yep.
Interesting.
Yeah, and so apparently Sebring, who's also one of the victims, was very much into black magic. That's the rumor. So these guys were kind of on the darker side of things, yeah. There's all kinds of arguments about Sirhan being connected to that. There's just all kinds of very strange stuff. Process Church.
Oh, yes, Process Church. It brings up the movie Cotton Club.
All right. I mean, this is, I think this, I have this following quote from, you want to talk about a cult Hollywood. This is, I think this is from Program to Kill, but it says, the omens kept coming. Shortly before her death, a pregnant Tate had an affair with an actor named Christopher Jones, who would later recall a disturbing encounter with the actress. Quote, one night we went to visit the Trevi Fountain, and I looked at her and had the strongest feeling she was going to die. Another time I was looking over at her, asking her what she was thinking about, and she suddenly came out with, quote, the devil is beautiful. Most people think he's ugly, but he's not.
Wow.
And they kind of, I mean, the rumor is they kind of had an open marriage and all that stuff. You
know? Yeah. Well, my question is, if she knew, with other people she had these had sex with being filmed, if they knew they were being filmed or not.
Right, right. I heard that there was a huge cover-up operation after the murders and stuff to, you know, cover up all the stuff, the nefarious stuff that they were up to. If you can show this picture, this is a picture of Sharon Tate. I think they did a film together with Polanski called The Devil, The Vampire Killers or something like that.
But you can see this. Yes.
Yeah, you can see this guy is, and she's kind of naked there, but you can see this guy's making the cornuto or devil's hand sign.
Incredible.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, this they were heavily involved in this stuff, man. And I forgot what writer it was, her name, but she was like, we were surprised that it didn't happen earlier because there was so much occultism going on in Hollywood at the time. Here's another. This is from The Eye of the Devil. This is actually pretty interesting because this is a reflection of the as above, so below kind of concept in the reflecting pool. So this is her.
On the stage.
She famously had a Last Supper at a restaurant in Hollywood that people would go every year to kind of eat there to kind of simulate the Last Supper she had. It was called the Coyote, I think. Coyote.
Oh, wow.
So she ate it, yeah. She ate at the Coyote and then was butchered, like really butchered in a really bad way.
Yeah, she was, horribly. Yeah, it's just, the Tate thing is just incredible. No, Anne Heche, that actress died mysteriously too, did she not?
She sure did. She sure did. A weird driving. She like drove into somebody's house. Then she was put on a stretcher and then popped out of the stretcher in some kind of really weird, strange thing. But she also has kind of an occult background. She was in a film that was directed by a guy who was a friend of Crowley. His dad was a friend of Crowley. And it's just an incredible, it's an incredible story. So she was in it with Christopher Walken, and the director's name is the guy who did Performance. What was his name? Totally blanking on his name, but she was in a movie with him kind of doing all that stuff.
Yeah, she was abused growing up by her father. as well.
Yeah, so abuse is like it was Donald Camel who sat on Crowley's knee, actually.
But wow.
Yeah, Donald Camel. The name of it was... doesn't come to mind. The film was Wild Side, released in
1995. Wow,
well,
I have some books to read and some movies to watch, it seems.
Pardon me?
I have some books to read and some movies to watch.
Yeah, there's a lot there. I mean, there's a whole occult history
of Hollywood. And I'm trying to, really, really hard, trying to stay focused on the mafia, right? But I gotta tell you, I really like to do something on the occult war with Nazis. I think that would be very, very interesting. Because I think there's a lot there.
Yeah, I think that there really is. They really kind of like, there's all kinds of weird stories of like the occult warfare. Kinds of strange things. Like there's a story of Druid warfare against Hitler. There's Crowley's involvement. There's other kind of strange people, just tons of occultists around Hitler that really haven't made it into the Western world. But people from the OTO who are friends of Crowley, I think Hitler's favorite artist was a member of the OTO. And Crowley is kind of famously in Germany as Hitler comes to power, right? So he's there during the Weimar Republic and then is kicked out. So Crowley got kicked out of Italy, France, and Germany and left the U.S.
I suspect that if the British knew that Hitler has a group of occultists, that they have a group of occultists to fight them.
I think so. I think that's possibly the same. I think Hitler can easily be called a philosophical Luciferian occultist. Yeah,
sure. I think
so. All his doctrines, I mean, they're all right out of Blavatsky. And the Nazi party kind of culture is Blavatsky. And there's no question about Aryanism, root races, reincarnation, all these things. They're not Christian.
No, far from it. Far, far from it. Well, I do thank you for your time, sir. How do people get a hold of you?
Yeah, you can find me at my podcast is William Ramsey Investigates. I cover a lot of different subjects, including occult Hollywood. My five books are on Amazon. You can find them on my website. And then also I have five documentaries you can see on Vimeo, or you can go to Patreon and watch them. It's just $5 a month, and you can watch them at your leisure on a... Occult Hollywood is on there. I have one on Children of the Beast. I have Prophet of Evil about Crowley. And then two on this phenomenon known as the Smiley Face Killers.
That's weird stuff. I mean, it's
still happening. Yeah, it happens. Chicago's just crazy in the last 2 years. There's tons of people being found in the lake.
And Tennessee now is getting bad too.
Which
me fits into part of the weirder parts of the cults, the human sacrifice.
I think so. I think it gets really, really dark. This last one about Riley Strain in Nashville that happened in March was very disturbing. And the cover up by the authorities in Austin, Chicago, in Nashville, and Boston should scare the living daylights out of every American citizen, because they're not divulging the truth of what's really
going on. No. And the thing is, it goes to show, if you're a young guy, take a friend.
Absolutely. Like, women are very kind of operationally cognizant, you know, they go out, they're coming back together, they're not getting drugged, but men will wander off by themselves, and it's a huge mistake for that to happen these days. Don't get separated from a group. It's like the Serengeti. It's literally like the Serengeti. Like, you stay together with your tribe, and you go together with your tribe, and nobody gets separated, because in the Serengeti, when somebody gets separated, the predator comes in and eats.
Absolutely. And we're doing a book on how do you go to Vegas the first time. And one of the things we're talking about seriously is steps to stay safe. A lot of the same steps to stay safe apply to Vegas, apply to Milwaukee, Chicago, wherever.
Absolutely. It's just more dangerous. People, the police aren't, there's not as many police. In some of these cities, they're understaffed. They may not even have the best candidates. And the medical examiners could suck. There could be Soros prosecutors or DAs. Oh, so the whole thing is a mess. It's like been rotted out from the inside out.
And I think, and this is my conspiracy theory today, that this has all been gamed out.
I think you're right. Yeah, I think it's all intentional.
The ultimate call.
They're trying to collapse the country. I think that's intentional. It's not by mistake. It's by design, and we have to deal with it.
Yeah, it's crazy. No, I do. Again, thank you very much for your time, sir.
Wayne, thanks for having me. Great to talk
about. Oh, no. It's a pleasure, all mine. I'm going to get money in the bank. I can go buy your books.
Well, you know, if you join $5, the way that I have my Patreon set up is... Here,
I'm setting up.
You have the way that it's set up is you pay $5 a month. Every $20, you get a free book. So it's almost like a payment program to get free books. And you can listen to my podcast without ads. So you don't have any ads at all. So all the people who are complaining about ads on iTunes or whatever, you can just pay $5 a month and listen to it.
What people don't understand, and I'll hopefully make some sense here, is... if we want to see content, it has to be paid for. Because we have iTunes costs money, everything else. It's only a couple bucks. Why not chip in?
Yeah, but the best thing is you're getting paid, you're getting content from independent sources without corporate. Like, nobody edits me or is, you know, telling me what to say. So you're getting it from the source of somebody who's reading it. All my stuff is all backed up by, like, references and sites and things like that, so it keeps you going too. So if I get enough people to pay $5 a month, like that's keeps me going. So then this information goes out and gets seeded all over the place. People pick it up, other researchers pick it up.
Yeah, so you don't know what things can do. You know, I mean, I subscribe to a Canadian news site that talks about the crazy motorcycle crimes going on up there.
Yeah,
it's insane. But again,
but it also just keeps going, and it also kind of helps society. Like, you're basically paying for, you know, people to tell you the truth. So it's not like you'd be surprised what other people spend money on, $5 a day on a big fat Starbucks coffee or something like that.
Yeah,
not that many people really complain. I don't really have that many complaints. They don't like the ads at certain parts of my shows. But that's the back end on Spotify or one of these other companies. I don't have power over that. And
no.
I do have power over some of the ads that are played, but I really don't. I'm not a part of putting the ads into the show. No real podcaster is the programmatic ads. I've checked the box of no alcohol, no porn, productive stuff. But, you know... sometimes the ads are beneficial, and sometimes it's just
like anything else. As good as bad. Well, sir, I do thank you again. I'll be signing up.
Okay,
thank you so much.
Thank you. Take care.
Happy 4th.
All right, you as well.
Bye.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.